Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm great. I'm not the one spewing chunks everywhere.
I'm fine now, okay? Yeah, I'm fine.
That's what happens when you eat your own three-eyed fish you made.
I know. I apologize. This episode is coming out a day late. I apologize for the delay. I think the episode is better off with me not recording and editing a podcast with me violently ill. So, I'm better now. Yay. Before we get into this week's episode, there's a few things I want to mention. A Twitter user, Cruz, at CruzyWoozy93, asked us if we played The Simpsons Tapped Out mobile game. Matt, have you played that?
I have not. I am not a mobile gamer.
I know. You're a PC gamer.
PC, and yeah, that's really it anymore. Yeah. Occasionally the Wii U.
Yes, whenever you're here. I have played Tapped Out. I played it when it first came out for a while. I just got kind of tired of it. I know I'm not a big fan of those freemium-style games. I get really too addicted to them. It's very nice, like, Simpsons kind of style game. It's very addictive. And it's good, well-designed that way. But aside from the Simpsons skin, it's kind of a game that is too easy to lose too much time in when I have things to do. So I do not play it anymore. I try and delete all those kind of games off my phone. I only try and play games that I can jump in and out of without having to dedicate a lot of time to. But it's a good time waster for my experience. I know I have a lot of friends who love it. You too can ask us questions on Twitter or on Facebook or on email. Our Twitter is @ Simpsons Show Pod, or Facebook as facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod. Email is SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. You can also reach us at our website, which is TheSimpsonsShow.com. Simple as that. Also, if you are listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher, please review, rate, subscribe. It really helps us out, gets us more eyes on it, gets us more listeners. We really appreciate it. Helps us out a lot. On to this week's episode. It is Two Cars in Every Garage and Three Eyes on Every Fish. Quite a title. I think that's the longest title we've had so far. It is episode 7, F01. It was originally the first episode of the season, but then they figured, oh, wait, Bart's very popular. We should have the Bart episode start the season off. It was written by Sam Simon and John Swartzwelder. And in watching this episode, both of those things are very apparent. Directed by Wes Archer. It originally aired November 1st, 1990. The chalkboard gag was, I will not Xerox my butt.
Which is just wrong. I mean, honestly, Xeroxing your butt is a lot of fun. Why would you make somebody stop that?
I mean, maybe if it's a color. The black and white kind of gets old after that. The couch gag is the family sits down, and the couch turns into a fold-out, you know, bed. It's not a repeat, which is really it's good in my eyes at this point, after watching that first season and seeing them repeat over and over again. This is beginning to really explore the Simpsons universe as this strange place where, like, multiple time eras exist all at the same time. I think that's primarily the influence of John Swartzwelder, who loves old-timey stuff. But this is a Burns episode. It starts off with Bart and Lisa fishing with cane fishing poles.
Well, they are poor, so, you know.
They're not that poor. Like, it's like a scene of Huck Finn. It's very odd that, you know, they're just fishing on the side of a river. It could easily, if they had a straw hat on, it'd be like Huckleberry Finn.
Well, this was before the internet, so, you know, maybe that's all kids had to do back then.
Matt, I lived before the internet, and so did you.
And I went fishing on the side of a pond on occasion.
Okay. But then a reporter comes up to them, and he's like a 30s style reporter, at least what I imagine is a 30s style reporter. And he talks like one, wonders what's going on, why they're fishing, blah, blah, blah. Lisa's doing it just for the tranquility. She is not even having any, she doesn't even have any bait on her fishing line. Bart is using worms, and he catches a three-eyed fish, Blinky, which we saw very briefly in Homer's Odyssey. And the writer saw that and decided to write a whole episode centered around the appearance of this fish.
So technically, this is a Blinky episode, not a Burns episode.
I guess this is a Burns episode. It's not, Blinky's in it. It's really just a way to get Burns into the spotlight. I would say it really is the first Burns episode. A lot of first season had him as kind of a bit player in getting Homer's plot moving, but this is a episode that's mostly about Burns, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. So it makes front page news in the Springfield Shopper. Mary Bailey, the governor of whatever state at Springfield's in, which I like it that they somehow managed to, they have a state election and they still managed to never mention the state.
Well, I mean, their logo is not just another state, Robbie.
I know. I believe online it says it either the flag is close to either Ghana or Syria, I want to say. That's what I read. But we meet Mary Bailey for the first time. She, I think, has some cameos in later episodes, but she really doesn't appear in any big way ever again. But her name, that's the name of, she plays Jimmy Stewart's wife in It's a Wonderful Life. Mary Bailey is the name of that character. But she sends investigators to the plant to figure out why there's three-eyed fish growing in the offflow from the nuclear plant. And pretty good segment. They wander through the plant with them finding numerous violations of safety codes. And Burns is kind of trying to play them off. And even he, by the end of it, is just like, it's always, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, that's always been like that.
Yeah. He just kind of runs out of steam trying to defend it. Apparently, and at the end, there's 342 safety violations. It's a tad bit. That's a tad bit too much, I would say. At the end, Burns leads them into his office and attempts to bribe them by just leaving them in the same room as thousands of dollars on a table.
Wait, you're telling me you haven't been left in a room with $1,000 on the table?
I've never been. No, it's never happened to me, Matt. Ever.
Oh. That's weird. You have a really crappy job, though. It happens to me all the time.
You're luckier than I am. Burns comes, he's like, just leaves him alone in the room. He comes back in, and the money's still on the table. Burns is very upset at the inspector for not taking the money and calls him stupid. He tries to just jam the money in his pockets, and I believe the inspector says, I'm willing to overlook this felony, but you still have 342 violations.
Which is pretty smart, because I'm pretty sure there's no way that guy would have kept his job had he actually taking the bribe.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious what's going on.
Burns is basically despondent at this point. And it's the first time we really see any kind of, we feel any empathy for Burns at all. At this point in the series, he's mostly been just over the top villain and villainous. Like we've never had any kind of sympathy for him. And he tells Smithers to leave him alone and he gets drunk. He just drinks until nighttime and is sad, and he just starts singing various songs.
About the railroad, for some reason.
About railroads, yes. I think it's interesting that in this, even in this episode where it really does make Burns look like a monster for the most part, he still has I think that's what makes this a Burns episode, is that the fact that you get this moment with him where you go, Yeah, you know, the first time you really feel sorry for him, you feel like, oh, wow, he is human. There's humanity in him somewhere.
Well, I mean, in Simpson and Delilah, you get to see his lack of hair and how much that disturbs him. But
I guess that's
really, this is the first time where you see Mr. Burns project a human emotion that isn't anger or grief.
See him actually, care. I guess I think that we see him care about something. And, you know, he cares about his plant and how he, like, even if he does do it, it's still kind of evil, I guess. And that's illuminated a lot later on in the series, but this is the first really glimpse and a focus on Burns in any length. So he's drunk, about to go home, and drive drunk, apparently. I think it's even established canon that he can't drive later on, but at this point he is able to drive.
Well, because I think he started out saying, oh, everyone will be able to drive, and then eventually someone said, hey, wouldn't it be funny if Mr. Burns couldn't drive because he sucked?
Yes, he's so old and rich that he just doesn't know how to do anything. I think that's Homer the Smithers. I think that's the episode that he doesn't know how to drive.
Yep.
But Homer has been sleeping on the job. He wakes up and it's nighttime. And he's leaving the plant at the same time that Burns is kind of stumbling out. And Burns is just sobbing and crying to himself, singing in his car. And Homer walks up to him and asks him what's wrong. Well, we have this clip and we're going to play it for you right now.
Mr. Burns? Sorry, sir. It's just me, Homer Simpson. Is everything all right?
Working late, Simpson?
Yes, sir.
You and I are a dying breed, Simpson. I'm going to share something with you. Hop in.
Ooh, cushy.
Homer, they're trying to shut us down.
They say we're contaminating the planet.
Well, nobody's perfect.
Can't the government just get off our backs?
You know, I was just telling the wife that if I was governor, I'd do things a lot differently.
Don't get off your soapbox, Simpson. Do you realize how much it costs to run for office? More than any honest man can afford.
I bet you could afford it, though. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you're an honest man. I mean, it just meant that you could afford to run for governor if you felt like it. And of course, I'm just rambling because you keep staring at me like that. But it's true. I mean, if you were governor, you could decide what's safe and what isn't. Where are we going, sir?
To create a new and better world.
If it's on the way, could you drop me off at my house?
So Burns gets the idea to run for governor. He realizes he's governor. He makes the rules, even though I'm fairly certain there are still federal laws about
No one can give them any rules except for the governor.
Okay. This was in the Bush senior years, so he probably did have a lot less oversight on nuclear power plants. We see Marge and Homer clash already at the news that Burns is running, because Marge, of course, is a supporter of Mary Bailey because she's a competent governor. and Homer makes the point, well, if I, you know, I won't get fired, you know, if you won't get fired if you don't vote for Burns. I do, even though I don't think he would know that you didn't vote for him. But
well, he would know. He would know.
I guess so. But we kind of segue into basically the first Burns commercial. He's hired these like a political team to help him get elected, and their first thing they have to tackle is Blinky and what he means. So they have a commercial air on, I guess, all the television stations, all the local ones at least. It seems that way. It reminds me of
back when there were only three channels on television?
Well, Ross Perot, like, he did that. I know he when he was running for president in 92, he, like, paid, like, $1 million and rented a TV spot on everything for, like, 2 minutes or something. In Burns' commercial, he shows Blinky, he has Blinky in a little fishbowl, and then he has an actor portraying Darwin, which is pretty great. Arguing that Blinky is just the next step in evolution.
Which, hey, it's possible, you know, third eyes.
Third eyes. Who wouldn't want a third eye? And I forgot this, but then Burns walks from one shot to another, and there's a giant elephant there.
Because elephants are awesome, Robbie. Come on now.
I'm all for elephants, but this is, I think, the official first appearance of an elephant on The Simpsons. But stuck with me because I totally forgot that there's an elephant in his little commercial. But he argues that, you know, his detractors would say that elephants are some mutated animal or mutant or something like that.
I mean, they would blame his ridiculous nose on the nuclear boogeyman.
Yeah, exactly. Which honestly is pretty honest political satire, because that kind of argument happens all the time. And this whole episode is really focused on just, like, making fun of politics. At this point is when it starts heavy on the Citizen Kane references. Like, a lot of them. And if you haven't seen Citizen Kane, you might not necessarily recognize them, but Citizen Kane has been used so much and been so influential on film and television itself. I mean, if you've never seen Citizen Kane, just watching The Simpsons through most of its heyday, you will have basically seen Citizen Kane.
Well, especially if you just watch the Burns episodes in general, because he is pretty much Charles Foster Kane.
But, he is Charles Foster Kane. And Burns is, you see him go through all these, the whole pretty much second act is all just going through the political process with Burns. He meets with his team, which is, you know, a whole long business room, one long table filled with them. One side is basically all the PR, and they're introduced one at a time. And then the other side are basically like the dirt team.
Oh yeah, they got the muckraker, the mudslinger, the garbologist, and the character assassin. Who, to be frank, do a really terrible job considering their only thing is to dig up some guy who felt her up when she was 16. Come on now, guys.
Yes, I like the garbologist. Cool, that's cool. A good title. If you found a position in life where your title is the garbologist, I have to admire that. You know, and we get a long montage of Burns politicking. He's going to, you know, publicity events. He's, you know, trying to knock down
pinata.
Pinatas.
That's the best part. I've never seen a politician knock down a pinata.
Yeah, and he fails miserably. Pinata knocks him down. And we get also a montage of the Springfield Chopper. Springfield Chopper, they use this device really well in this episode because it tells a lot of story in a very, very short amount of time. And it's very effective. And it basically kind of transmits all this information about how Burns, he keeps doing better and better and better in the race. He's catching up to Mary Bailey's lead when initially I think he had a 0% approval rate. And then after the commercial, it was 6, I believe.
Which brings us to 6, but we're on our way.
Yeah, exactly. It's more than 0. And he's up to the point where he's neck and neck with Mary Bailey. And they want to have him for the last night before the election day. They want him to have dinner with one of his workers, you know, a blue collar worker at, throughout the episode, Burns references all the blue collar middle class to lower middle class people. These are the names he uses. He uses Joe Sixpack, Joe Meatball, Johnny Lunchpail, Sally Housecoat, and Eddie Punchclock.
Good old Eddie.
I like Eddie. Eddie's my favorite of those. I love Eddie.
He always clocks me in when I'm late, just like Homer.
Yes. Poor Homer with his stuck with plain cake donuts.
Which really, honest, those are the worst donuts ever.
But if you look at the clock in that scene, he showed up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's what the clock says. So he shows to work at 3 and complains that the good donuts are gone.
Sorry, Homer.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, yeah. Thanks for taking all the fancies. But Burns is looking, he looks through all the security cam footage and spots Homer, picks him. Homer unleashes this news on Marge, basically the last minute. I think it's the night before. And she's obviously upset. One, because she wants to go out and, ring doorbells for Mary Bailey. She's a Bailey booster, I believe is the term she uses. She hesitantly agrees, showing the trademark Marge patience, which she uses a lot in this episode, considering that her and Lisa, you know, I don't think Bart really cares. He's just doing whatever Homer says. But Marge and Lisa are both extremely against Burns because he is kind of an evil person. And they see that, and they're not fooled by all his glad-handing.
Also, Maggie is also a Bailey booster because she wishes she was old enough to vote for Mary Bailey.
Straight down gender lines in the Simpsons household. But Marge agrees, and this kind of segues into one of their pillow talk scenes right in the middle of the episode, right before the third act. And Homer wants to snuggle, and Marge obviously is upset because he's impinging on her right to express herself. And we have this clip pulled, and it's really great because it really sets up the ending of the episode and kind of shows how, like, clever Marge is with this. So here it is.
Marge, get back in bed.
No, I'm just fine right here.
What's wrong? I just want to snuggle.
Well, I don't feel like snuggling.
What's that got to do with it?
I don't want to snuggle with anybody who's not letting me express myself.
But you do get to express yourself and the lovely home you keep and the food you serve.
Okay, Homer. Fair enough. You got it. All right. Good. That's it. That's how I'm going to express myself. That's right. Good night.
Huh?
Homer says, oh, Marge, yeah, you... She's like, I can't express myself. And Homer's like, you express yourself. You express yourself by how you, you know, how you cook and how you clean and how you do the house and all that stuff. Like, very condescending talk to Marge, who is a extremely competent homemaker who has to put up with all of Homer's crap.
It's like, sure, she's always the one cooking, she's always the one cleaning. So, to be fair, Homer's kinda right. I mean, that's generally how she, it's not the only way she expresses herself, obviously, as we learn in later episodes, but if there's one way she can do it without really trying too hard, that would be the way.
But it's in this case that she really wants to say something, and Homer doesn't want her to. And she caves in with the caveat, because I think at this point, she already knows what she's going to do. I think she already knows, well, if that's how he wants me to do it, that's how I'll do it. I'll express myself in a very specific way right when Burns comes over to dinner. So we basically cut to Burns coming over to eat. The huge camera crew following him around. The whole house is wired for microphones and sound. There's a whole bunch of people, like, who've redesigned the interior design, having Burns posters everywhere, and all the family has makeup on. Homer looks like Tyrone Power initially, which Matt and I actually watched this episode together, and Matt at that point asked me, who is Tyrone Power? And I said, I don't know, but Wikipedia says he's an actor who died in 1958. So that is a deep pool. I'm assuming that's the work of John Swartzwelder. But yeah, he was a swashbuckler apparently in the early days of film. And Homer has some crazy eyebrows when they first do his makeup.
But he's so handsome with it.
He's very happy with how he looks, but he looks like a crazy person with eyebrows like that. But, so they have, Burns comes over, he has like, what does he call it?
Noodle Kugel.
Noodle Kugel, which I don't know what that is. It sounds kind of like a German casserole or something like that.
Sounds delicious to me. It's got noodles.
It does have noodles. It can't be that bad. But first Santa's Little Helper and then Snowball 2 both tackle him. And he plays it off with aplomb. He smiles and laughs. And Burns really does have, for typical Burns, he has really excellent self-control in this episode. Because, in this scene especially, because these things that are happening to him, he normally would be very upset about them. Like a dog, like a common dog attacking him.
He'd be releasing his hounds.
Yeah, and exactly. And Homer, like, what does he call? He calls Santa's Little Helper the neighbor dog after he tackles Burns. They have dinner, and Lisa has to ask him a question, which she's very pained to do so. Like, it's a scripted question. Was it your campaign is like a runaway freight train? I want to say.
Yeah. Why are you so popular?
She says it with the least amount of emotion possible. And then we laugh because Lisa, she walks out halfway through Burns' explanation. Which I had never noticed before. Like, he just starts explaining and she just walks off screen. Which is pretty great. And she goes into the kitchen and she's like talking to Marge, and she's like, oh, Mom, why, this is killing me. Like, my soul is getting destroyed. And Marge is like, you're learning a few things tonight. And one of them is to never, never underestimate your mother. I think is that what she says?
That is exactly what she says.
Yes, never underestimate your mother. And it zooms in on her carrying out this dish, you know, big covered dish. She puts it out, she takes it out to the plate. They've already eaten their salad. Burns is launched off into a few different, vitriolic.
He seems to be really obsessed with taxes.
Yeah, vitriolic rants about taxes and other button issues and stuff like that. All of course tuned to key to all the people watching. And Marge comes out, puts down the plate, pulls off the lid. There sits Blinky, cooked and ready for Burns to eat, to make true on his words that he said at the end of the commercial. He had said, you know, it's good eating. He had called it quote unquote good eating,
with a taste that can't be beat.
Taste that can't be beat. And campaign guy is off screen, like, making eating gestures, say like, here, this is your chance. All I gotta do is eat one bite and you've won. Cause that you've made true on your word and you've shown that Blinky is harmless. He cuts off, and Marge, she cuts off basically half the fish and puts it on his plate.
Especially the part with the eyes.
Yeah, the head. The head is still attached, which, I would have, like, I've thought about, you know, you go to Asian restaurants and you see people order the whole fish with the head and the eyes still there. I've thought about doing that. That'd be tough, especially if it has three eyes. I knew it was eating a three-eyed fish, a little tricky.
Plus,
there.
They never really say what kind of fish Blinky is. What if he's a type of fish that doesn't taste good in general?
Which there are a lot of them. Yeah. There's a lot of fish that we don't eat because they just don't taste good. But Burns He tries. He takes a slice off the fish, and this is animated so beautifully. Because it's, you know, this, you see the orange skin and then the interior, and then there's a little flap of orange skin hanging down, and it's still moving, it's still wiggling as it's going through the air, because we get it straight from Burns' POV. And it flaps like three times in the air before he puts it in his mouth, tries to chew, tries to make a smile, and then slow motion, puss, spits it out, flies across the room, lands at the feet of his campaign team, and boom, over. His loss is almost, is all but sealed at that point. I believe he says, the campaign guy says, ruined before it hit the ground?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Perfect. Burns, all the reporters go out. We see the journalist from earlier that saw them fishing. Basically, his campaign is wrecked. His campaign team leaves him right alone with it's him and Smithers alone in the Simpsons house. Burns just starts wrecking the place the way that only Burns can, by like feebly knocking over flowers and picture frames and stuff.
To be fair, he is stronger here than he is later in the series, because he's actually able to pick up pictures and things and not blown away by a stiff breeze.
That's true. And he gets Smithers to knock over a table. Homer actually has Homer destroy his own vase. But Lisa, you know, tells him ask him to please go home and ask what the destruction was going to accomplish. Burns agrees to leave and, you know, says, I believe, something to, once he can go home and destroy something tasteful.
Yep, because Simpsons have nothing tasteful.
Yeah, and we actually have the clip. This ends the episode. It has Burns is out in the lawn yelling at Homer, and then we cut to Homer and Marge in bed. And like a lot of episodes, this is how it ends. Here's the clip.
Simpson, I shall make it the focus of my remaining years that your dreams will go unfulfilled.
Uh-oh, you're busted, Dad.
Oh, my dreams will go unfulfilled? Oh, no. I don't like the sound of that one bit. That means I have nothing to hope for. Marge, make it better, please. Can't you make it better, huh?
Homer, when a man's biggest dreams include seconds on dessert, occasional snuggling, and sleeping till noon on weekends, no one man can destroy them.
Hey, you did it!
Mm-hmm. This is... how many times... I mean, this is... And still, we're only... not even that deep into the second season. And how many times has Mr. Burns threatened to destroy Homer Simpson so far? I want to say three times. It's at least two.
Sounds about right, yeah.
I mean, I know Homer's Odyssey in this one. That's two right there.
I assume Mr. Burns is one of the people who makes that threat a lot. Like, oh, you want my coffee cold? I will make sure your dreams go unfulfilled.
Yeah, he threatens Homer to keep his dreams unfulfilled. But then Marge ends the episode, and I think it's really that the episode ends with Marge and Homer, and Marge, she has pretty much maintained the power structure. Like, Homer, she's so patient with him, and every moment that he needs something in this episode, he goes to her. Right when he wants to let Mr. Burns come over for dinner, he begs Marge. He gets out on his hands and knees. And, you know, he's constantly asking, even when he's doing things she doesn't really approve of, he still has to go to her. And now at the end of the episode, he comes back to her after he's made all his mistakes and asks her, please fix it. Please fix it. And it's very kind of very heartwarming and touching. Although it is, this is my main criticism of this whole episode, is the ending here. It feels a little abrupt to me.
It is a little abrupt, but I thought about this, and I don't really know where they could go from here. It's like, what could they do besides, you know, go to the next week where Homer is sleeping in and wakes up happy and has completely forgotten about it?
Yeah, it's already established that the status quo just kind of resets after every episode anyway. But I don't know. It just seems like, you know, you get angry, all that kind of action, and then a very quick kind of denouement, you know, with Marge and Homer in bed, and the episode's over. And I understand, because this episode is jam-packed with content. There is a lot of stuff in this 21 or so minutes. So I understand that, you know, why they tried to make the ending so quick, that kind of this resolution of Marge and Homer to put a little bit of a happy spot at the end so it doesn't end with Burns just threatening to destroy Homer's life. I don't know. It just felt a little abrupt to me.
I don't know. I suppose they could have gone and shown Homer at work like the next day or the next week, and Burns is like, Homer who?
Yeah.
Which would set up the joke for the rest of the series.
But hindsight is 2020. I mean, it's already established that even so right before this episode that Burns forgets about Homer immediately after, you know, whatever happens, because he doesn't remember him from Homer's, the stuff in Homer's Odyssey in this one.
Yeah.
So I guess it's not a big deal, but overall, this episode's really good. This is right up there with kind of Bart the General in the thematic, and kind of allusions and references to Citizen Kane first and foremost. You think so, Matt? Think it's good?
I do. I think it's actually quite the good episode. It's got lots of allusions. It's got funny in-jokes. It really, with the exception of a well-used guest star, it pretty much wraps up all the Simpsons do well. You know, like I said, it's got allusions. It's got funny jokes. It's got satire. It skewers authority figures. I mean, those four things are kind of what the Simpsons are really known for. I mean, if you add in the guest stars, that's pretty much everything they do. And this has 4 of 5, and it's only in season 2. It's a really good, really tight episode. There seems to be no wasted time. And even, to be fair, stuff is always going on in the background. So there's not even a wasted visual time. So because something that important is always happening on the screen. It's a very tight episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of visual, a lot of the quote-unquote VCR gags, which later become DVD gags, and then later become...
Pause VLC gags.
Yeah, exactly. But very good episode. We're going to rank it at the end. The news group was kind of quiet for this episode. There's always a few posts about how they loved it, and, you know, people, they mention, they add to the list of the couch gags and the chalkboard gags. There is something notable that happened in alt.tv.simpsons. I do want to point out, you guys can still check it out. Go to Google Groups. It's there. I look up the roughly week or two after the episode airs and see what people say. There was a very long post about someone calling everyone out in the news group, calling them lame. For obsessing so much over this show. Already, it's 1990. Internet is a baby. And we already got people on the internet calling other people on the internet lame for liking something.
Which is a tradition that will stretch on and on and on.
Yeah, even today, we're not past that. It still happens. I'd love to hear them what they think if they knew that. We have two nerds hosting a Simpsons podcast explicitly about all this stuff and mentioning them 25 years later. But there are a lot of rebuttals. A lot of people got upset about being called lame, even then. And a lot of people were very upset about that. But I think, the most interesting thing I saw. Most of the other stuff was just kind of the basic, oh, this is a good episode. Oh, I like that. I like that joke. Everyone always loves the Homer's dialogue. I think that's... always, just constant quotes about Homer's dialogue. I think with that, we can jump over to our listener question of the week. Listener question of this past week, coming on the heels of Treehouse of Horror 1. What is your favorite Treehouse of Horror segment? This is a tough one, and I think it's the toughest question we've had so far, just because Treehouse of Horror is loved by... everyone loves Treehouse of Horror. There's so many different segments to choose from. It's really hard. I know it was hard on me trying to figure this out. First, we got from Twitter, we have Bryant, at Red So Deep, Homer Cubed, love the Tron reference, love the mind-blowing CGI for the time, I remember thinking it was state-of-the-art, and Amanda, at Drawn to a Sandy, agrees, Homer Cubed will always be the segment I'll remember, change in art styles wowed me as a kid, which, at the time, it was pretty revolutionary, having that kind of animation on network television. We have Brandon at Funny Film Fan. His answer is The Devil and Homer Simpsons. Forbidden Donut. Yeah, love seeing Devil Flanders. We have Josh at Josh Mims 2. My favorite segment is the Omega Man, because I love when Homer says, go to hell, Clokey. John, he has, I think, the cleverest answer of this week. I had to include it. Choppa Style 311. His answer is Time and Punishment. If you don't include this answer, I have a toaster I'm ready to try out. Hashtag what are donuts?
Yeah. Oh, it's raining again.
Yeah. We have Chris S. on Facebook. After reviewing so many of my favorites in Eliminating the Raven and The Shining, since they already been talked about, I have to go with Time and Punishment. He is also Homer trying to fix a toaster, turning it into a time machine, finding out Flanders is a dictator, Giant Bart and Lisa trying to squash him, the family being wealthy, Patty and Selma are dead, but then finding out the donuts don't exist, and yes, only run away seconds before donuts fall from the sky. Maggie killing Willie, that whole episode with Willie dying.
This is indeed a disturbing universe.
Yeah. And then, eventually landing back on a family that eats with the lizard tongues, but decides it's close enough. It's very good.
Which is convenient, you know. I'd stick for that universe.
Yeah, lizard tongues aren't so bad. Max B, also on Facebook, Citizen Kang. I love this. Kang and Kodos, Bob Dole and Bill Clinton, Homer accidentally killing him. Political satire at its best. Wasn't very scary, but it worked. One of the greatest lines, and very topical due to the midterm elections coming up. Don't blame me. I voted for Kodos. Which is great. And finally, on Reddit, we have Cody Av, The Shining. With several cinematic shots, pulp culture references, and paces through the jokes very well. Also add in, obviously, the no TV and no beer scene. And he is linked to multiple screenshots of all these cinematic shots and pop culture references. The Shining probably was our most popular answer this week, and with good reason. It's probably the most, one of the most recognizable Treehouse of Horror segments. Matt, I'm very curious about this. What is your favorite?
Honestly, I was a little worried that someone would pick this, because it's just, I love it. My favorite is Clown Without Pity. Segment in which Homer gets the Krusty doll for Bart. And just, first of all, the idea of an evil Krusty doll is fantastic. Second of all, the guy he buys it from is fantastic. I mean, that's where I learned that potassium benzoate is bad for you.
Potassium benzoate.
Which, actually, it's not. It's just a preservative food. But anyway.
At the time, they probably thought it was terrible.
That's true. And Frogert made a comeback. I just have to point that out. Frogert's back.
That's true.
And Frogert, on its way out again.
Stuff. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I think we hit the nadir of that, and now it's back out again. But eventually, it'll come back again.
Exactly.
A couple people did have that as their choice.
No surprise.
Not a surprise. I usually tip the hat to what I'm going to pick, and this week's no different. The Devil and Homer Simpson is my favorite. Flanders as the devil. I love it. And Bart and the devil on, you know, first name basis. I love that. I love the lineup of killers and horrible people that come to judge Homer. And there's even a little touching moment at the end with Homer's soul already belonging to Marge. We see Homer in hell. Oh, it's so great. Love it. It has everything. It's actually kind of scary. It's like horrific in the hell in when he's in hell. It's also has the jokes. It has everything to me. Oh, it's so great. So good. Can't wait till we talk about it. For this week, our listener question, very simple. What is your favorite Burns episode? And why? This is the first real Burns episode. And I think, you know, there's lots of them. I already know mine. I already got the answer to this one. But I'm looking forward to see what you guys say. You guys always do a great job. Again, you can, I'll post all this stuff on our social media, on our Twitter, on our Facebook, on Reddit. You can also always email us the answers. I talked about that earlier in the show. All those links, all that stuff, it's also on our website, which is simpsonshow.com. Before we head out for this week, we have the segment that ends every show. That segment is called Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is a segment where Matt and I rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode and how good they are in relation to one another. Really, it's just an excuse for us to discuss what makes a good Simpsons episode. Now, Matt, where do you think this one lands?
Oh, it's so hard. I mean,
it's tough. It's tough.
Honestly, since I am a fan of the illusion-based episodes. Especially this one, because it's in the vein of Bart the General. It's pretty much an entire takeover of Citizen Kane. I'd probably have to put it right below Bart Gets an F, and ahead of Simpson and Delilah, just because it's so tight, the jokes work so incredibly well, and I really enjoy the Simpsons episodes that focus on side characters, because even as early as season two, you kind of already knew how the main characters, what their characters were, they had developed a little bit, and focusing on the side characters is always a nice break. And you learn, and they're able to be a little more wacky with the side characters. And this episode, you get that with Mr. Burns.
I actually wholeheartedly agree with you. That's exactly where I would put it as well. Yes, number two. I would put it right behind Bart Gets an F. Like that one, it is jam-packed with jokes. There's tons of thematic and cultural and film allusions in this one, which is basically a hallmark of what The Simpsons is and is famous for. Again, and this is a great, the first and a very good Burns episode really sets the tone for what we can expect from Burns episodes from now on. Pretty much everyone after this is basically just playing off of this episode. This sets the tone. And the satire in it, the environmentalism, which is, I would say the environmentalism is mostly from Sam Simon, who is a huge environmentalist, really is even, he has a terrible, he's, I think, been diagnosed with terminal cancer and has long outlasted his original doctor's predictions of how long he would live. And he's still fighting for, you know, tons of environmental causes and all the Citizen Kane and old-timey kind of references, which I would bet go to John Swartzwelder. But the whole episode, very good, very tight. This is going to be hard. I'm surprised that this one was so easy. But yes, this is now number two, right behind Bart Gets an F on our list of best episode ever. Next week, what's next week, Matt?
Next week is Dancin' Homer.
Another great one.
Fantastic one.
Yeah, great episode. Before we go, I do want to say you can catch me on Twitter at Mixmaster Serial. It's MixmasterCereal. You can check out all the stuff I get up to online. You can listen to my comic book podcast. That's Handsome Boys Comics Hour, handsomeboyscomicshour.com. Matt does not participate in social media, so you can't find him. Sorry.
That's true. You can communicate with me using tea leaves, however. Just arrange them in the special pattern. If you want to know how to do this, you should. And if you don't, obviously you're not special enough.
No, I can't. Nothing to add to that. I don't even know what this arrangement is. So if you guys figure it out, let me know. But I think that will bring this episode to a close. Until next time, I am Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching The Simpsons.